Episode 88 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 30th, 2016. TV is greater than books. So we were talking about a variety of things before we start recording. Oreos, unicorn porn, whether unicorns should breed with horses. You guys don't get to listen to any of that. I'm sorry about that. Today we're going to talk about TV and why books are terrible and TV's great.
All of our listeners just disappeared. Where they go? They're like, we're going to go to the podcast that actually talks about unicorn sex.
We're not serving that underserved unicorn porn market.
Yeah. You know what? I bet it is a hot market.
I'm not going to Google that.
Look at the brony market. It's huge.
I don't want to look at the brony market, Grant. Yeah. You look at the brony market.
Don't lie. I saw your bookmarks. Well, hey, guys. We have a fun episode this week because not only do we have the finales of Game of Thrones, of Silicon Valley, of Veep, as well as the entire season we're going to talk about, season 4 of Orange is the New Black over on Netflix, but we have a special guest with us. This week we have Ashley Moreno. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Yeah. Ashley, you can find her over on oneofus.net, as well as you are a writer for the Austin Chronicle.
I do. It's written, and I know now we're really focusing on audio media today, which is greater. But I have been known to read every now and then. Just don't tell. I'll get wedgies. Don't tell anyone.
No, it's okay, because we didn't specifically mention newspapers.
Oh, okay. Those are retro enough. They're cool again.
It's retro. They're hip. Yeah, exactly hip.
You can read them while you go to your ukulele class. The other hipsters.
So before we get into that, Ashley, what have you been up to?
Well, let's see. One thing I'm very excited about, I found a new two-player game. I'm not wildly popular, and so finding one other person to play and a solid game to play is always exciting for me. It's called Patchwork.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A quilt-making game.
Yeah, yeah. It's really great. So the fiction, depending on who you are, not so great. But it's basically like a board game version of Tetris. And you make a little quilt, and whoever scores the most buttons wins. But it's a really sweet two-player game. So I've been playing that.
Hey, you know where you can get that game?
Is it an analog or a digital?
It's an analog game.
Oh.
It's like a card game, like a board game. Like the kind of thing you might find at Rose Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas.
Oh.
You run that store, Randy?
I do.
That's your store. That's my store. That.
I'm so sorry, you guys. I did not mean to just tee that up.
It's okay. It's what I do.
So if you could promote something that I make money off of, too, that'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. Actually, so beer-wise...
Oh, I do beer stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, Black Star has a guava IPA on cask that will rock your socks.
Really?
Yeah. In general, I really like Blue Owl stuff. Mm. I really like sours, but if it's too fruity, then I put it in the pile of margaritas and I give it to Randy.
It's not wrong. She's not wrong.
You love fruity beers.
I love girly drinks. Fruity. All girly drinks.
But there is another there's a beer here in at the Alamo Draft House that they're doing as promotional for Ninja Turtles. Have you guys heard about this one?
No.
It's called It's Pizza Time, and it's a pizza-flavored beer. I'm so excited about this, and I still haven't had a chance to go to the Draft House.
So here's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. Pizza-flavored beer. Mm-hmm. Better than or worse than kimchi-flavored Oreos?
That was on the tip of my tongue. That is a really good question. Like so many Oreos, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Pizza-flavored beer sounds awesome to me. If it's an IPA, you already got like notes of like pineapple they're going to express there. So if you're going like a Hawaiian style, you could get some meaty malt in there. Put some oregano flavor or whatever in there. Mm.
Grant, have you had many beers with the notes of Canadian bacon?
God knows I have. How do you think I paid the rent back in the 70s? You know what, though? I think I could see that because a michelada's good. Yeah. At first, you're like, oh, tomato-y, those kind of flavors are too rich or something for beer. But I get down on a michelada.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I'm desperate to try, though.
By the way,
I'll have to report back.
We would be remiss in not reporting that your other podcast, The Beerist, won an award.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yes, we won an award for the podcast awards for The Beerist in the arts category.
Hey, aren't we in that category?
Huh?
Aren't we in that category?
No, we'd be in the TV and film category.
If everybody loved us and voted for us like they should have.
They did not.
Yeah.
They do not.
Love us, Randy. That's rough.
That's a very contentious category, though. Apparently, there's other podcasts that cover stuff within the television and film.
Wait, there are other people talking about TV?
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
Wow.
Yeah, in fact, I was actually just on a podcast TV Times 3 where I got to chat about some of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight.
Oh, cool.
So I cheated, I guess.
You know what? There's our buddies who do the Mr. Robot podcast,
mm-hmm.
that single show podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's another single show podcast coming up.
What's that one, Randy?
Oh, it's called Beach Cop Detectives, a Terriers podcast.
What a great title.
Is it about dogs?
I'm just kidding.
I love dogs. Everyone knows that.
No, Beach Cop Detectives is in process. I recorded the first episode. It is a rough cut, is in the works right now. So you should see it late summer.
Nice. Okay, yeah, because I think we might wait until we have a few of them kind of queued
up. We're
going
to wait until we have a few of them.
We got a bit of a rhythm with it before we start releasing them.
Yep.
And as a special note, if you guys are a Patreon member, what's Patreon, first of all, Randy?
Oh, Patreon. Well, that's where people can go and they can give us money every month.
Mm-hmm.
And every episode, I believe. And when they do, they get, not only do they get the satisfaction of knowing that they have supported us in our podcast making.
That's kind of cool, paying for something you enjoy.
Yeah, paying for content, helping us get, you know, better microphones, better mixing board, going to festivals like ATX Fest so we can report on it for you, all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. They also get bonus content every week.
Oh.
Yeah, bonus podcast.
And that some of that bonus content is going to be your Terriers podcast. We're going to give early release to them.
Terriers is going to release early to Patreons.
Yeah, so that's pretty rad. And if you guys are like, whoa, I don't know how much I want to give. I mean, we're saying like a dollar an episode. That's A-OK.
That's great by us.
That's like $4 a month from out of your pocket. If that's breaking the bank, there might be some other issues with your job, I suppose.
Economy's rough, Grant. The economy's very rough.
It is. I'm not going to make any assumptions. But you can also put a cap on it if you need to.
That's true.
Just in case, like, I'm going to charge for a billion things this month. You owe me $1 billion.
Or if you're a Patreon subscriber from England and your economy's tanking.
Oh.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Oh, sorry.
Their economy's tanking.
Sorry, love.
It's all made up for now.
Well, no, I had to speak to them in their language.
Oh, now they understand? Okay.
Too soon. I'm just kidding. It's an old language.
Well, all right, guys. We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And, of course, we have Ashley here with us,
Hello.
As we've already mentioned. And I already mentioned the Patreon, so I guess it's time to just move on to the listener questions.
But you didn't mention our new Patreon.
Oh, you are very correct. Hey, we have a new patron. This is More Ben Reuven. Reuven.
We love you. Thank you for being a patron, and we're sorry we butchered your name.
I'm sorry. But thank you so much for joining Patreon and supporting us. That really means a lot to us. Moving on, we got some listener questions. First off, you guys can ask us questions if you go to our Facebook page or our Twitter. Follow us. We'll put up a little post once a week. And our first question is going to come to us from Daniel Wallace, who says, so, dudes, any wild speculation for that? Whoa. Yes, we do have speculation for Game of Thrones, but we're going to get to that when we talk about Game of Thrones at the end of the episode.
Yeah, also, I'm scared of Grant speculation because Grant goes to all the boards and the deep web, he predicted stuff from this thing that I would have happier not knowing. I still loved it.
Okay.
But there
okay.
was stuff I'll try and dial back the crazy extended.
I'll try and be a little more careful about
go
it.
Go less deep.
I'm sorry, I'm just always right.
Go less deep, Grant. Go less deep.
Said no one ever.
Yeah. You weren't saying that yesterday. All right.
I was, but you couldn't hear through the ball gag.
God.
They're so close, you guys. Literally right now. It's awkward. Save some room for the Holy Ghost.
All right, next question comes to us from Dennis McElwain. He says, which good guy's death felt like an oh yeah moment? I stood up and cheered when the brat from the V remake got his throat ripped out in the series finale.
Whoa, spoilers for a show nobody's ever going to watch.
Yeah. A good guy that dies and you cheer for it.
Oh, man, I know there's answers for this. I'm trying to think of anybody recent that I've that's been... Like, good guys that you just kind of wanted gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like most of the characters from Walking Dead I kind of want gone.
You're kind of happy when they die.
I love when... Sarah Wayne Kelly, her the wife of
Andrew Lincoln. Glad for her to be gone.
Yeah, when she dies,
it was good to see her go. This is a tough question because usually, the question is like, which characters are you tired of, really?
Yeah.
Because there are characters you get tired of and you're ready to see them go, but I'm blanking on any answers. And I even looked at this earlier and I still couldn't come up with any. You know what? Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There are a whole lot of characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'd be happy for them to kill off.
Not who do you want killed off?
Oh, is that not the question?
No.
Because yeah. Quake, I'd cheer when she died.
You're going to name every character, aren't you?
You know what? when they finally killed Ward...
Yeah,
I was pretty happy. I guess he was a bad guy at that point.
Yeah, he flipped at that point.
Yeah, but I was still happy he was dead.
You're happy when anyone dies in that
I'm
show.
I'm happy, because the more people that die in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the less chance they'll renew the show and make me watch it again.
Fair enough. Is there anyone in particular that you could think of, Ashley?
I don't know. I've been rewatching, a lot of Next Generation.
Yeah.
And... my mind went where yours went, where Alexander could just go. But when the wife died, I was excited because, like, the first time around, because I thought that meant that Worf's immediate and extended family were just going to disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
And back I got prematurely excited.
Back to the Future style.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, well, one after another, they're all just going to go, and we'll be back to our normal storylines.
Yeah.
I can get back to my favorite episode, Data's Day, and that's all they're going to be from here on out.
What about Guinan? Where were you on Guinan on Star Trek Next Generation?
So...
because I have sort of a fondness for her, but at the same time, if her bar had blown out into space, I wouldn't have been real sad about it.
So, here's the problem with Guinan.
Okay.
And this is gonna sound real bitchy.
Better you than me.
Yeah, exactly. So here's me sounding real bitchy. So whenever you write something, when you want to write like a really like clever, insightful, brilliant character, so like if you want a Gandalf or a Tyrion, then you can do it if you're like George R. R. Martin or if you're Tolkien or someone like that.
Right.
But if you're whoever they got to write some random ass episode. And Next Generation, the odds of you nailing something like Guinan is not going to come out very well. So I'm thinking of like her shining moments where her wisdom came through.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it turns out she doesn't play tennis or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that one episode with the doctor. I just never buy that she was this borderline omnipotently clever, time-traveling being.
And also, having it be a black woman really plays into the magical Negro
stereotype. That's the second problem, yes.
And yeah, that's not a great idea. That said, one of Whoopi Goldberg's stronger roles.
I have to say, yeah, although, you and Danger Girl, good line. From the cinematic classic, Ghost.
Oh, well.
Obviously.
I'm also a fan of Jumpin' Jack Flash. It's a terrible movie, but I liked it.
Hey, there's another question. Right now.
In both Sister Acts.
No, the rest of the show is about Jumpin' Jack Flash.
I hope it isn't. All right, our next question comes from Real Rob Fan Club. This is Randy's favorite troll.
God damn it.
Oh, almighty dudes of the television, I have a question that begs to be answered. What do you think of the news that Rob Schneider is joining season 4 of Silicon Valley?
I think you're a monster, Real Rob Fan Club.
Just kidding.
You're a monster.
Just kidding. Such great news couldn't possibly be true, he says. Actual question. Do you think Preacher is going to be a show that doesn't really catch on with people until like season 2 or 3 due to the amount of uncertainty early on and things that still need to be established? With binge watching culture now being huge, I worry that people will be impatient with the show and give up before they actually get to what the hook of the show will be.
I think that's a really good question. I had not realized the Preacher ratings were kind of low.
When I was doing that podcast, TV Times 3, we discussed Preacher, and I realized how other people don't like this show.
I know there's people out there who don't like the show.
And if they haven't read the comic book, a lot of people are going, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And it kind of led me to realize that a lot of the problem with that show is you don't have the driving force and motivation behind the main character, which I think the comic did.
Yeah.
Early on, Jesse Custer gets his power and he makes a plan for what he's going to do with that power.
Right. I mean, in the first issue.
He's going to go after God.
Yeah.
Here, he gets it and it's just kind of bumbling around town and a bunch of weird stuff popping up
being
all over.
Being an AMC damaged hero.
Yeah. And it just kind of, it feels meandering.
You know, that
they
makes
can't
sense.
Do that if they're also being cryptic and guarding their secrets from the audience.
Ashley, are you watching Preacher at all?
I am not. I am behind on that one.
So I've only seen 3 episodes. I'm a couple episodes behind. I've been really liking it more than I expected to. But the people criticizing it for being slow are not wrong. Like, they are definitely taking their time.
It's a lot of fan service, but at the expense of properly doing storytelling for newbies to the show.
So his question is it going to catch on with people until season 2 or 3? Well, we know now it's getting season 2. We'll talk about it in the news, but that's a good thing because I wasn't sure it was going to get a season 2.
Unless they're pulling an HBO and they're going to cancel it by the end of the season.
Yeah, that's true. I think that is a possibility. I think it's possible it could be a show that doesn't catch on until season 2 and people are like, oh, it got great. I mean, that happened to some extent with Halt and Catch Fire. Even though Halt and Catch Fire hasn't really caught on, but it caught on well enough to get a 3rd season. But it was a show where everybody was like, oh, 2nd season's really good. And there's definitely shows like that where season 2 is where people get in. Like BoJack Horseman. I still haven't watched season 1, but I love season 2.
Yeah.
So I do think it's possible, even in sort of our binge culture, that the network's going to be a little more patient with it and that people will catch on. But I also feel like a show like this, if it's not catching on early, it's definitely not a good sign for it. And I don't know if people are going to have the patience to come back.
Yeah. We're going to be really reliant on buzz bringing people back into the fold.
Yeah. It's a dangerous game to be playing. So I don't know if it's going to catch on or if they miscalculated and we're just watching it slowly run to the ground.
We'll have to discuss more next week when we actually talk about the show.
Next week, we're going
to
catch up on Preacher.
Next question comes for us from Michael Gastini, who says, after seeing Lady Lyanna Mormont completely dominate the very little screen time she was given in the Game of Thrones finale, can you dudes think of any other minor TV characters that have made a big splash on their respective shows?
I think you got to go to The Office and Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Because those guys, all those minor characters like Jerry became a huge character by the end of that show.
Aziz Ansari's best friend, and then his sister Jenny, who's played by Jenny Slate, who I love. Yes. I love her. I know her too. You're out there, Jenny.
I love her too, but I didn't love her in that show as much.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's not really my favorite role, but she's quality.
She's awesome. I love Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
So are we kind of distinguishing between like cameos and minor characters? Like they're just kind of in.
Yeah, like, I mean, they were fairly minor characters who became bigger. I mean, Parks and Rec, that's kind of what they did.
Yeah, I would say, like, with Parks and Rec, the one scene with Patton Oswalt
was
gigantic.
That's an obvious one, yeah.
But if I'm going with, like, minor characters, like, throughout a series...
But those weren't... I mean, like, The Office characters weren't built to be ongoing characters. They were just, like, usually writers of the show... Like, Toby was a writer on the show...
Yeah.
...who played a small part, and then they kept writing for him. Like he wasn't built to be to take over the show. If Game of Thrones was going 3 more seasons or 4 more seasons, writers would start writing for Lyanna Mormont.
But he was in almost every episode. He was going to be a background player in everything, right?
Was he? I guess I assumed that he was someone that just kept writing.
Well, they had
for
3 writers or 4 writers that are all on the show as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't figure they were like the main characters. I'm trying to think of other ones in like dramas and kind of things that have.
What about in
up.
Breaking Bad? I can't remember now, but wasn't it that Jesse's character was supposed to die off pretty early on?
Jesse was actually supposed to die, and they loved him so much.
Because he's so good.
Yeah, because he's so good.
Michael Emerson in Lost.
Oh yeah,
he was supposed to be a brief character that was just supposed to serve a purpose, but then he became kind of like the driving villain.
Well, we're talking about Lost. What about Nikki and Paolo?
Or that polar bear.
The polar bear totally stole the show.
All right, Randy. Well, if we're talking about minor characters, how about all the characters in Terriers?
You suck. You shut your mouth. You go to hell and you die.
Well, I think it's time to move on to another question. All right, here's another Game of Thrones related one. Ross Brown says, what character from another TV show do you think would do a good job on the Iron Throne and get Westeros its shit together? I'm thinking Cookie Leon from Empire, or simply just the Punisher.
I have one word for you, and that word is Heisenberg.
I don't think he could.
Oh, totally. He would dominate the Iron Throne.
No.
He'd play them all against each other. He would do chemistry. They don't know about chemistry.
He was very much about himself.
Do you not think...
And that was his downfall.
He'd be the guy who would invent wildfire.
Mm.
No? I'm going with like half the people in Firefly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which half? Like, Jane would not do well.
Jane, River.
Jane and Bronn can hang. Like, Jane and Bronn can hang, I think.
Yeah. Not River.
Not River.
No. Maybe Preacher.
Yeah.
He would be great.
Yeah, the Preacher.
Yeah.
I think Wash would do well.
Yes, he would, because he would do good at everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Michael Bluth wouldn't... He might do okay.
He would be Ned. What are you talking about?
It would be hilarious just to have him have to suffer it.
I would love to see Job. Like, Job is assigned to be Cersei's, like, consulate. And...
Job would have to be his hand. Michael Bluth, he's like, ah, damn it, Job.
Follow-up question. What is the Game of Thrones equivalent of a Segway? What would he ride?
That's a good question. I don't think we've seen it. There would have to be a beast. There would have to be some kind of beast that is always stands on two legs and looks semi-ridiculous,
yeah.
But is very balanced.
Something like the equivalent of those guys on Hoth.
Yeah. Yeah, like
something
a Tauntaun.
Like a Tauntaun.
A Westeros Tauntaun.
A Westeros Tauntaun.
By the way, a mashup time.
By the way, in most whorehouses, the Westeros Tauntaun is going to cost you an extra $20.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Unless our band... The Westeros Tauntauns are playing, in which case we get that service for free. Y'all pay double, though, to cover us.
All right, let's just go with one more question here. This one's going to come from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. Many people are saying this is the best season of Game of Thrones. I can agree that the last two episodes will definitely be on the top 10 list of best episodes, but there are a couple plot threads and pacing issues I could personally do without." That's not what he says here.
No, but he also mentions Orange is the New Black and says it had some of its worst moments in this new season, despite it being the best season so far.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not sure I agree with that, but we'll see that when we get to our Orange is the New Black discussion. But the question is, how do the dudes judge the overall TV season? Do you favor a season with a consistent level of quality, a season with some missteps in quality that are compensated with great moments in storytelling, or something completely different? I mean, obviously the platonic ideal is... a story that is consistently great. That's what I'd like.
Everything on all levels is just working.
But if
perfectly.
You can have one or the other, if you can have a consistently solid but not great show, or a show that is swinging for the fences and hits great, but sometimes is just terrible because of it, which would you take? It's a good question.
I think I want the more ambitious one.
Yeah, me too.
I agree. I would rather someone fail spectacularly aiming for something great than just sort of... I mean, if I wanted solidly produced, always entertaining, but never much above that, I just watch CBS. Their stuff's always solid.
Or Beer Goggle Theater on TBS.
I don't know what that is.
It's exploitation movies paired with a meal for the day, sometimes hosted by Elvira.
All right.
I think of like good, like solid quality of something like Rectify, but it's also a little bit kind of boring. Because I live for those big moments. I want the spectacle here and there.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll take Daredevil over Rectify any day.
Or Lost, for example.
Shut your mouth! Shut your mouth!
Well, no, you're right. Nikki Apollo was great.
The problem with something that's totally solid, but doesn't do something spectacular, is that a year from now, I'm not going to remember it. Even though it was consistently solid, it's going to be something that has some moments that weren't shining, but that just shone every now and then, that is going to stick out of my mind. Otherwise, it's going to blend together with the other good, almost great stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
And I did want to note one more thing. We got a tweet question from Jason Bellaro, who asked us what our thoughts were on Voltron. And I wanted to say, hey, we're going to talk about that next week.
Yep, next week.
So tune in next week. And meanwhile, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
All right, so we got some news, a lot of renewal news. So let's hit the one we already alluded to already, which is Preacher has been renewed for a season two by AMC. 13 episodes, so it's bigger than the first season.
So the first one's only 10.
First one is 10.
I feel like maybe they should stick to the 10 episode.
I tend to agree, although it says something for their commitment to the show if they're giving it 13 episodes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm really liking Preacher, what I've seen of it. Maybe it takes a turn in the last two. I don't know.
The most recent episode I was pretty disappointed by.
Really?
So, but I think it's just more of the overall problem of what they're trying, like how they're trying to sell this show.
Okay.
And I mean, we already spoke about it, but I need more drive and focus on what their vision is, where they want to go with it.
Yeah. I definitely can see this being one of those things, like AMC does this where they start a show and sometimes it seems okay and you're interested and it just doesn't gel, doesn't come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that Preacher does, because I liked it where it started. Okay, so Fargo Season 3, they're saying that though Fargo Season 3 is coming out next year, there may be a longer break between Season 3 and a potential fourth season.
This is kind of interesting, because yeah. It seems like FX is going... They're kind of having this issue, like Louis... Yeah. Is taking a indefinite break from his show, too.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of losing Fargo.
Well, Noah Hawley said, I guess, assuming there's going to be more than 3 years of it. Every time in the middle of one, I go, I don't know if there's another one. I know big corporations don't usually do a mic drop after success. But one of the things I really respect about John Landgraf and FX is we did the first one. It was a huge success. And we wouldn't have done another unless we both felt like we could equal it or top it. And I like that. He says the same with this one. The bar is very high. I don't think there has to be 10 years of something to make it great. If you usually get, what, 5 seasons in 5 years? I'll probably have 3 seasons in 5 years, given the first one was 16 months between seasons, and this one will be 18 or 20 months between seasons. So at this point, I don't know. And you know what? I respect that. I'm totally for leaving the audience wanting more.
And he's also doing that Legion show.
That's on FX. It is on FX, yep.
Oh, yeah. So... Hawley's completely abandoning FX.
No, Noah Hawley's going to work whenever for. That's the other thing. Hawley can work on whatever he wants to work on. So I like this. I like Larry David's like coming back to Curb whenever he feels like doing Curb. I like Louis doing whatever he feels like doing. I think creators who have vision like this, let them work at their own pace, because that's going to benefit you. Because if you don't, you wind up with True Detective season 2.
Except Game of Thrones, you guys better be back.
Yeah, you motherfuckers get to work.
Yeah. What else we got?
Lost in Space is getting a reboot.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, you remember Lost in Space. You know the movie with Matt LeBlanc?
Yeah, that's my only knowledge of this.
Yeah. Well, there was also, before that, there was a show that ran for 83 episodes, which apparently might have been better than the movie.
Oh, yeah? You think?
I don't know that that's a high bar to set.
The movie had Mimi Rogers as well.
That's true. And so. John Hurt? Was it John Hurt or the other Hurt?
William Hurt? Hurt?
William Hurt.
John Hurt?
One of the Hurts. The Hurts brothers.
I'm sorry, I don't have the Lost in Space trivia at the tip of my tongue on
this
one.
How do you not?
I know you guys always hear me talking about what a...
That's why you're here, Ashley.
Underrated film it is.
You were supposed to be our Lost in Space expert.
Why do you have that giant Matt LeBlanc tattoo on your arm if it's not for Lost in Space?
Well, I mean, I'm a niche market.
She likes Friends.
Yeah,
she
likes Friends.
Joey, that one.
She's the big Joey fan.
I also love that Fools Rush In movie from the 90s. I feel like it really captured something about love.
This is a tattoo. This is Joey forever with the four.
I think you're thinking of Chandler.
Actually. Oh, I am thinking of Chandler. You're right. He was
the other Matt.
You're a big Friends fan.
Oh, God. Full disclosure, I hate Friends.
Yeah, okay. Then you can take Greg's place, because Greg also hated Friends.
Oh, okay. Thank God. Yeah. So please tell all my friends I confused those two.
All right. But this show, okay, here's the crazy thing. There was a bidding war for the rights to this in November. There was a bidding war for Lost in Space.
And who won?
Netflix won.
That's what's interesting.
Yeah. I was going to guess no one.
Yeah.
No one won.
Well, it may be none of us win when it comes on the air. But the writing team is Matt Sazama and Burke Sharpless, both of which are made up names, I'm sure. They have written a couple things you might have heard called Gods of Egypt and Power Rangers. Not feeling better about Lost in Space. And showrunner Zach Esterin, who was from Prison Break and Once Upon a Time. That's a little better. Straight to series order, 10-episode season. They're calling it big-scale, four-quadrant family entertainment, because of course they are. I don't know, man. They're trying to get family drama and action and all that kind of thing, and I think this might wind up being a little more Fuller House than Orange is the New Black.
Hmm.
I don't think I need this. I already have Miles from Tomorrowland. On Disney. Why don't
Plus,
I need this?
Do I'm you? Already bored.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't need this.
I know. Honestly, I'm inclined to give Netflix the benefit of the doubt. I mean, they do have real Rob. They're capable of mistakes. Big mistakes. Huge mistakes. But I don't know, man. I a sci-fi show on Netflix, I'm gonna at least give it a shot.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're going to watch it.
Yeah.
But our weekends aren't exactly action-packed.
My weekends are.
I'm so lonely.
All right. Then we've got The Flash has a new bit of casting. Is this Draco Malfoy?
It's Draco Malfoy, dude.
Draco Malfoy is going to be in The Flash. That's the big news that I go with.
I'm kind of excited because it's Draco Malfoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess he was in one of those Planet of the Apes movies, but otherwise I haven't seen him.
Did he play with the monkeys?
He was in the first one, right? He was the asshole kid.
Oh, that's right. He was the asshole kid, Book of the Apes.
Yeah, remember when
he started the Planet of the Apes?
Remember when he played an asshole kid?
Yeah, yeah, I do remember that.
Every time.
It says here that he is going to be playing Julian Dorn, a fellow CSI at the Central City Police Department, an asshole kid. No, I added that last part.
Well, all right. Tell me, Randy, who's Julian Dorn?
I have no idea. I've never heard of this character.
Come on!
Never heard of this character. You got to remember, I've been reading DC for like 5 years, ever since New 52. So they added a bunch of random characters that I don't know who they are. I didn't know who Patty, whatever her name was, either. I wound up liking her.
Yeah.
But he suspects there's more to Barry Allen than just his good guy reputation.
Oh, he's another one of those characters.
Yeah, he might figure out he's the Flash.
What an asshole kid.
Or maybe the Flash will just tell him because that's what he does. He's like, hi, I'm the Flash.
And we got one more story.
One more story. And this is really exciting. Jessica Williams is leaving The Daily Show. That's not the exciting part, although good for her because that show has gone down.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
But she is leaving it to star in a new scripted comedy on Comedy Central about a woke young feminist.
And she's collaborating with one of the ladies from Broad City on this. They're writing it together.
That sounds great.
Yeah, right? And, you know, with everyone else kind of jumping ship from Daily Show, at least Comedy Central kept her on their station.
Yeah.
Because they seem to have Samantha Bee has gone on to do great things over at TBS. And, of course, John Oliver. And, of course, John...
Stewart.
John Stewart.
Yeah.
No, what's he up to? No, not John Stewart.
He's at HBO now.
Who's doing The Tonight Show? What's his name?
You're talking about John...
It's not Stephen John,
Colbert.
Is he? Colbert.
John Stephen Colbert.
John Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Many people don't know his first name's John. No,
but you had to be. They because it would be confusing to have John Stewart and John Stephen Colbert, they just shortened it to the Canadian Stephen Colbert.
I keep trying it's his confirmation name.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Little known fact.
I keep trying to edit the Wikipedia and they keep getting rid of it. Like, he's John Stephen Colbert.
Is with a dash?
Yeah.
John Stephen Colbert?
So while we're on this topic, I don't think we've bitched about The Daily Show for a while.
I can't. I'm not watching it. I haven't watched it an episode.
What about you, Ashley? Are you watching The Daily Show?
I haven't been watching The Daily Show, and I try to lay off, I guess just because I had so much goodwill to that show.
To the show, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean...
It's terrible. It's so boring.
How can you take all of the components, a lot of the writing staff, a lot of the other talent that was there, and just do nothing with it? How can you even have Trump running and not have constant, like,
and that's the other weird thing
material.
Is that what I've seen of it early on, like, Roy Wood Jr. is a good correspondent. Desi is a good correspondent. They've still got Jordan Klepper. They still have Jessica Williams. Like, all the components were there. The only thing they changed was they brought in
Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah instead of Jon Stewart.
And he's
so you ha- I mean the writers are the
vanilla,
same.
Vanilla, odd choice of word.
Ironically,
but he plays everything safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he seems like when he does interviews, it's still like even when I check in later.
Yeah.
It seems like softball questions. Everything's a little bit awkward.
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, Jon Stewart was never great at interviews, but he was genuine. And Trevor Noah Trevor Noah gives off this sense of not giving a shit.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart was the heart of the show, and I think that's what they've lost, is that Trevor Noah may care, but I can't tell because he looks so amused by all of it.
He seems too cool rather than self-deprecating.
It's a shame.
I feel like we need the endearing self-deprecation.
Well, I mean, here's the other thing. In Trevor Noah's defense, nobody wanted the show. Jessica Williams turned it down.
Samantha Bee never even got offered.
Yeah, that's what I thought Samantha Bee did.
I thought Samantha Bee.
No, they never even offered it to her.
Did they not? Oh, I thought she turned
it down. Because I already made my little flag and everything.
Yeah,
sure. It said Bee, and I was ready to start waving it.
Yeah, no, I thought there was one. Somebody suggested early on that like you should get Samantha Bee and Jason Jones to host the show.
Yeah,
as a married couple, like that would have been an interesting change. And I love both of them. I think that would have been great.
Yeah.
Although then we wouldn't have gotten Samantha Bee, full frontal Samantha Bee, and that would have been
sad. Which is solid.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's real good. A format change like that would have been good, too, because you don't, I mean, how do you follow Jon Stewart, right?
Exactly.
And so my expectations already set so high.
Yeah.
I don't think Trevor Noah's delivery is right for the show. Yeah, he has kind of an understated comedic style.
Yeah.
And so I'm just not sure it's right, but it also sucks to try to just switch in another guy when it was so associated with him.
Yeah.
So some kind of format change like that, I think, would have set them up for a little more success.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. I mean, honestly, they'd already lost. They lost Stephen Colbert. They'd already lost John Oliver, who could have taken over for it.
Yeah.
They'd already lost Larry Wilmore because they were doing the nightly show. I don't know that Larry Wilmore would have been any more successful, but at least Larry Wilmore's passionate about things.
I mean, I still at least, I felt like the format was also stale. Like, they needed to kind of update that. They don't need to be doing these other interview segments. They don't need to be doing the interview segment at the end. They don't need to have the little sketch clip with their little news team.
Moment of Zen.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Grant,
both.
They did remix the theme song.
They did.
And but it was terrible.
Both Oliver and Samantha Bee, they just kind of get up there and they do it all themselves.
Yeah.
And it's much better for it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard, though, because, I mean,
it's daily.
Yeah, it's daily. Yeah,
that's true. That's fair.
But also, when I think about the talent that we've seen come from those guys, like, if you know that you have that in you, it's hard to say, okay, I'm going to just get promoted into this other spot when at this point somebody would let you create something of your own.
Yeah.
So I could also see it being kind of hard to expect any of those guys to kind of step into that
role. I mean, it does seem like nobody really wanted to do the job. The people who were good enough to do it were going to go off to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And the people who are smart enough but not quite talented, maybe hadn't worked their way up yet, but they
that
were smart
was
enough.
That was a wicked bird.
But they were smart enough to go, oh, I don't want to try and follow Jon Stewart. And Trevor Noah was young enough, talented enough, but not maybe smart enough to go, you know what? This is a shit job and I shouldn't take it.
And gosh darn it, people like him.
Yeah.
Talk about Orange is the New Black season 4.
Yep.
And this season, this dealt with the new privatization of the prison and new guards coming over. I mean, last season left off with all the women kind of escaping, but more for like this beautiful escape to just go swim in a lake. It wasn't like they're all on the run.
But they didn't flee to New York and do a whole quick change thing.
And I'm so glad that they didn't try to have the women on the run kind of season or something like Prison Break.
I'd watch that season, though.
It'd be kind of funny, right? But it would also kind of... It
sounds like a Wings song. Maybe that's banned.
Women
on the
run.
Yeah, Women on the Run.
I just think that it would lose the spirit of the reality of the show.
Yeah, I agree. It would be too wacky.
I mean, they have a lot of farcical elements, but they tried to keep the overall like horror of a prison system grounded.
Especially this season, it got dark.
Yeah,
and it started off actually to be a pretty upbeat tone.
It did,
but about the halfway point, started getting a little dark, a little weird, and then the last three episodes, it was like Jesus.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So, they started going kind of darker at the end.
Yeah, so overall, what'd you guys think?
Loved it.
Yeah, I think
this
was my favorite season.
Yeah, me too. I'm such a fan of that show, so I don't need to just gush for the next four minutes. But so I love that show, but this has been my favorite season. I really loved it.
You know what the big thing for me was Judy King.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was going to be like a one-note joke.
Me too.
But they really gave that character some depth. I love that she was like this pansexual... like joyful person who then turned out to be a manipulator, and like it was I loved her arc.
I liked her less, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I felt like the two areas I didn't like in the show as much were Judy King's story and Piper. I just didn't like Piper was supposed to be the lead of the show, and she just became annoying.
I'm not
rooting for the character at all.
Piper's
now.
Been the problem of Orange is the New Black since the beginning, which is kind of weird because it's her book that's based on.
Yeah.
But yeah.
She's almost like the villain of the show.
She is. And that's why I was actually interested in her arc, because her becoming sort of the unwitting villain I thought was interesting.
Yeah. I actually liked in this season both her and So-So. You kind of find out that there's a piece of them both, less so, that was awkward, and more so Piper. But both of them have this shitty side to them that the show kind of explores versus Healy, where you get to see this more humanizing side. So that switch was cool.
You know what? I hate Healy.
Well, yeah, like, he's a dick.
You're supposed to hate
when,
him.
When he was when he was walking out in the lake, I was like, yeah, do it. Go to the lake.
You forgot the rocks.
Yeah. There was no part of me that was like, oh, that's so sad. I'm like, no, drown. Go drown. Mm. You're a terrible person.
So that's interesting. Who did you hate the most this season? Was it Healy?
It's still Healy. Oh, no. No, it's that fucking psycho guard.
Yeah, for sure.
I hated that guy.
That makes her eat the mouse.
That was. I mean, he was always a little creepy, but when he did that, I was like, fuck, I need this guy to die.
Yeah.
See, because I was interested with the other guard, Bram Hinkley? Hankey? I don't remember his name.
Brad Hankey?
Brad Hankey? Is that the actor's name?
I think so.
He was from Justified, season two. He was the big dumb one.
Yeah. You talking about Piscatella, the head guard?
Yeah, Piscatella.
I liked Piscatella.
And it's a little bit of a transformation. I mean, he's like a jacked, gigantic dude. And I remember him in Lost.
I liked Piscatella in the beginning. I thought they did a really good job with him.
He's a good no-nonsense guy who just kind of becomes a little bit off the wall. Like,
he goes a little too far.
They all go a little bit cartoon villain, don't they?
Yeah, he became much more cartoon villain by the end.
Except the rapist.
Yeah.
Who goes the other direction.
And that was interesting.
And that was super interesting. Yeah.
I love that entire arc, because at first, like right up until that final scene with him, I was just wondering, I'm like, what's your overall goal here with this exploration? Because are we the audience supposed to forgive a rapist in a way?
Yeah.
Is that it? Are we just supposed to see that like he did something of course there's a whole power issue, like he's in control as a guard, but
he's also stupid.
I'm like, okay, did he think that was a consensual thing and there's a misunderstanding? Like, what are we supposed to get
and how much
this?
Of that matters?
And if she
like
forgives,
how much does it matter if he thought it was consensual? He's still a rapist.
Like, I'm agreeing with like Big Boo on all this.
Fuck that guy
forever.
Well, and I think that, I mean, for me anyways, I also agree with Boo. I'm just like, no, but if you've ever dealt with somebody who has been abused in any sense of the word, that comes up, and then you find yourself in this interesting position where, okay, you're not even the victim, this other person is, but you sort of feel like they're just being re-victimized.
Yeah, you like, want to advocate for them because they want to advocate for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
But they don't want that.
Yeah, but they
don't
want that.
She was also a victim, Boo, and so she was projecting her own experience.
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes a really complicated, and I don't think the show is clear on how the audience is supposed to feel about that, for sure, which I also thought was kind of, because I don't think it's an easy question to answer. But yeah, for sure, I felt Boo, like with you, that Boo.
But raising in the first place is kind of ballsy. I mean,
oh, super ballsy, because that's not the kind of thing that's talked about.
This is not the kind of thing, if there was a male showrunner, I don't think this is a show that could have done it. I think you have to have Junji Konan running it to get away with that without it raising a lot of ugly, you know,
or handling with the delicacy that they, I mean, because I thought the end scene and how it ended up resolving itself with her ending up like ultimately kind of forgiving the guy and then seeing that monster side just come right back up and going, whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was like, it was so powerful how the whole thing resolved, at least, you know, story-wise for us, the viewer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like, good. Yeah. I'm back to hating the guy again.
Yeah.
I feel better as myself hating.
And I think it's the kind of nuance too that, not that men are not victims of sexual crimes, because they absolutely are, but because it is rarer when you do have a male writing team, I think that kind of nuance doesn't come up as much, just because that doesn't come up in their lives as much.
I think that's true.
And so, I thought the show nailed it. And I did like the ending that you're like, this guy is an abuser. He is a monster.
He's still going to go the same way.
Yeah, he's going to go the same way every time. Like, this isn't an accidental situation or anything.
I think it's interesting to go back to Piper real quick. I actually did feel a lot of sympathy for her during her, the whole being branded and all that kind of stuff. She got herself into it, absolutely, but she did. She got herself into something that she was not capable of handling.
You felt bad for her getting branded?
I did feel bad for her getting branded.
Oh, man, yeah. I did not feel bad.
Really?
I kind of felt like that was justice because in prison, they could have done anything.
Yeah.
And probably, I mean, they murdered a guard and it took them a while to find it. Like,
true.
They could have done some evil shit.
I thought
true. And
something
that
much
woman,
worse was going
to
happen.
Yeah, me too.
Like, oh, that's all she gets?
And
oh, that's easy.
Well, and it's like, if she hadn't been able to quickly change it into a window or whatever it is they're calling it, like, to be, I mean.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was not the actual pain of it and all that. That's horrific enough. It was the notion of this poor, privileged, liberal white girl. Like, for her, being branded as a Nazi forever, that's a pretty bad punishment for her. I'm not saying she doesn't deserve
it. But she should have had to stay with
it. She did accidentally start the white supremacist movement at Litchfield.
And then she capitalized on it.
That's what I was going to say, too. It's like, how accidental is it?
That is the thing. When her Hawaiian roommate sort of sold her out with the same sort of sing-songy, that I loved. Because I was like, yeah, you deserved that. But then
I so rooted against Piper.
Oh man, I thought that they did an okay job of making me not hate her the entire season. But I still would be okay if she got transferred or let out and we never saw her again.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I was so happy when Laverne Cox's character came back and when Nikki came back.
Yeah.
I love Nikki. She's
me
great.
Too. Although Nikki breaks my heart.
Yeah, like a heroin addict.
Yeah.
Every fucking
every
time.
Every
goddamn
like,
time.
Come on, you can't give her like the win for just a second. No.
But what's the actress's name?
Natasha
Leone.
I love, like, she seems like it's so effortless for her to play the character that she plays.
She's great.
She's so perfect in it. And other times you can kind of look at a character and you're like, you see the acting kind of behind the scenes. And her, like, she so embodies who that person is that I'm like,
well, I think she had some problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
of
just,
those types.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just how she, like, delivers all of her lines. I'm just like, I completely buy you are this person through and through. And it is a person that, you simultaneously, you feel bad for, but you totally want to hang out with like, all the time.
So is she your favorite character on the show?
I took a quiz.
Did you?
Where I was like, which Orange is the New Black character am I?
This was in Cosmo?
And no, it was, I don't remember what it was, Vulture maybe. And I'm Poussey.
That's not going to end well for you.
Yeah. But I most identified with her, and I guess it's probably because of the hooch. It's like, am I a drunk?
Are
is
you making prison
say?
Hooch?
Shh, I'll never tell.
Ashley, what about you? Favorite character?
My favorite character is Tasty.
Oh my God, I love Tasty.
I love her.
Yeah.
We were emailing a little bit earlier today back and forth about the show, and she delivers my favorite line of the season, which is when they think they're going to get some money coming from the photo that they staged with Judy King, and they're all deciding what it is they're going to do with it, and she's like, I'm going to follow around D'Angelo like white people follow fish. Lost it. I loved
that.
It
was really good.
It was so good.
I might have to go Red. I really like what they did with Red this season. I really like her.
They didn't even do too much.
No, but she just does so much with what she gets.
Yeah.
This
is when she's kind of been a background player in this season.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of characters.
There's
a lot
of character
stuff to explore.
But I do really like, I was kind of surprised how much I liked the two girls who are sort of the dumb kind of Hispanic girls. The one
Flaca.
Who was like Flaca, and who's the one who was the con man or con woman? What was her name? She got the flashback episode.
Yeah, she's...
And she's the one who had to eat the mouse.
I have to pull it up, but yeah.
And
the super pretty one.
I wound up really liking her character, because I was like, I had always sort of thought of her as like, okay, well, she's just there to make jokes. And then they gave her like a serious storyline, and I thought she did a really good job pulling it off. And there was still lots of funny stuff, like the whole thing where she's like running the con, and it's falling apart on her, and she just does not have the wherewithal and her wits on her feet to like keep up with it. So she basically like pretends to throw up. And then jumps
Which
back
is
in the
actually
car.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. And then she just jumps in the car and drives away. I love that. That's like that's where the plot went. That's how that went. And I thought that was really a fun flashback. And then just seeing where her story went with that creepy guard, I was like, she can play like a little more serious.
Yeah, I actually I read her character a little differently. I took away from her that there was she has this like ditzy outside, but that actually she's a little clever on the inside.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, yeah. And it reminded me of some of the scenes from Clueless.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the movie where Alicia Silverstone's character is driving in the car and mm-hmm. she's with her brother, and his brother's girlfriend is like, "It's like Hamlet always says, to your own self be true." And then Alicia Silverstone's character goes, Hamlet didn't say that. It was that other guy, Polonius. And the girl's all, "Well, I think I know my Hamlet." She's like, "Yeah, well, I know my Mel Gibson, and he didn't say that." And she's right. And I kind of felt like that's who the girl in Orange Is the New Black reminded me of. But like, she's actually kind of clever, but just comes across spacey.
I know my favorite character. It's Suzanne, Crazy Eyes.
Yeah,
they did. Yeah. They've done so much good stuff with her. Like this season. Her whole arc and that heartbreaking flashback to how she wound up in there.
Yeah.
That was
also part of the last three episodes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just boom, boom, boom. And I think it started with the mouse eating.
Yeah.
Like, was that the scene that like really kind of kicked off like the last three episodes going like unrelentingly dark?
Yeah. I think that,
because all of a sudden you realize that guard is crazy. He's a psychopath.
Yeah.
And after that, it's that, okay, like the entire like just kind of destruction of all the characters.
That was actually episode 9. He tried to force her to eat a baby mouse.
Oh, okay.
Or
so
didn't try. He did.
Because 8 was then Suzanne's.
8 was Suzanne's flashback, I believe. Yes.
Man, all of that was just so heavy.
Oh, and Blanca's, that 9 is also the flashback to Blanca's housekeeper past. I love seeing that flashback to Blanca. And
that was awesome.
Yeah. Bianca. Yeah.
So you had mentioned, Ashley, some of the themes that we were seeing in this show. You wrote up some notes prior to our recording, and you were talking about like some parallels that we were getting in this show to like real world events, like the whole Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. the I Can't Breathe kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We had a... Palestine versus Israel.
I love that Palestine versus Israel relationship.
Which is like the West Bunk.
Yes. Yeah, that killed me. Yeah.
We had some Abu Ghraib kind of parallels definitely going on with stuff like the humiliation of standing on a table.
Yep.
And yeah, it, like
Judy King and like, it's just like a cross between Paula Deen and Martha Stewart, and Martha Stewart, I feel.
But more likable than both of them.
For sure.
But yeah, it like, I thought they did such a great job of evoking all of that without being like on the nose commentary with how they handled everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, it kind of, how they are able to toggle the line between the humor of the show and then go, oh no, but there's something real here and we need to make you as a viewer kind of recognize how fucked up our prison system is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the abuse of power that can happen. And, you know, I constantly root for Caputo.
I was going to ask where you guys were on Caputo, because I feel like in the first season, I basically thought of him as kind of a scumbag.
But he's more sleazy than scumbag,
yeah,
right? And it was just kind of unclear what his motivation was.
Well, he's the guy who kept jerking off every time the inmate left his office. Like, that was his defining thing, is that every time an inmate left his office, he'd close the door and pull his pants down. I'm like, what the?
And why did they decide to change him, I guess?
Probably because that's not a great character arc for 4 seasons.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and the point at which the prison becomes privatized, if the prison corporation is shitty and the guy running it is also a dick,
it just
then,
becomes too awful.
Yeah, it becomes too awful. And you need someone in there who's like pushing the stone up the hill but failing. And that's Caputo, I think.
I liked him. I liked his relationship with his girlfriend who... She's clearly damaged and dangerous, but I kind of love the two of them together for a while. Like, I'm not rooting for them in any way, but I'm like, oh, you know, he deserves a little happiness with a woman who, like,
Linda
loves him. Like, clearly just gets Caputo in a way nobody's ever gotten Caputo.
Yeah.
But she wants to mold him into the Caputo she wants him to be, and that's not the Caputo we want him to be.
Well, follow-up question.
Yep.
So when you break up with Linda, she slits your tires, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. But after that, your tires are slit.
Yeah.
What does she do next?
Well, she definitely shits in your gas tank. Absolutely, that happens.
Yeah. Which is funny, because she's not a tall lady, but she's a problem solver.
She does call you at 4 a.m., she will show up to at least one of your work functions with a gun.
Yeah, well, 4 a.m. Yeah. because it's just past the witching hour.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. so her yeah. back teeth have come in.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Well, and that's when she's run out of booze. And she's like, now she's going to make the call.
Yeah, yeah. I'm out of
bullet.
No,
it's going to be an ugly, ugly breakup. Linda does not take rejection well.
Spinoff.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and talk about the end scene and the big event with Pussy. Pussy? I always Pussy. Say it wrong.
It's Pussy.
Yeah.
Is there
Please anyone, hold my hand for this.
Is there anyone else that they could have done this to that would have been worse? And I don't know that there is. Like, she was the most gentle soul in the prison.
Yeah.
She had the proper arc, the proper yeah. development where yeah. she kind of found herself. She found happiness and love yeah. in her relationship with yeah. So-So. And she was at a point in the story where it made sense.
Yeah.
To fuck with the audience and kill yeah. her.
Well, her relationship with So-So sort of redeemed So-So.
It did.
So-So became a much better and more interesting character when she had to sort of confront some of her own biases and some of her own, like, shit. Because otherwise she was going to lose Pussy. And yeah. I thought that really... She redeemed that character.
Yeah.
But I'm like... I mean, it was heartbreaking enough when they sent Laverne Cox's character down to Shu and she spent the whole goddamn season there. But this was worse. This was so terrible because not only, I think the other thing that made it worse is that it was the one sort of decent guard who did it. Like that guy, you knew it was going to destroy him.
Yeah. Any of the other guys, and you're like, you motherfucker.
You motherfucker,
but
yeah.
But they did it with him, so we yeah. sympathize a little
yeah.
bit because he had no intention of that.
He was, yeah.
He just was never properly trained.
He is never going to come back from that.
Yeah.
He is done.
And, like, I love that they showed his episode. Was that with
that was
this happened?
I believe that was with that, yeah.
And how he just kind of fell into this position,
yeah.
but
yeah.
it was never a
yeah.
a passion of his.
No.
He didn't really actually want this.
It was just a job that had benefits.
Yeah. And now we see the cost
yeah.
that will be inflicted upon
yeah.
him.
Which is another good sort of real-world note, is that the whole point of... you know, prisons are not hiring people who are qualified necessarily because they're just hiring who they can get.
Oh, man. And the final episode.
Yeah.
I love it. It was a beautiful story
yeah.
of her. I'm guessing this was like one of her last days before she had to like turn herself into prison. Was that kind of what
yeah.
was hinted at? With
yeah.
Well, her day in New York.
The nice thing was it showed her having a great day.
Yeah.
It showed the sort of magical that we'd lost her. But that she'd had joy in her life. And I honestly, throughout all of it, I was wondering if it was real. I was wondering if it was like we were seeing the sort of
it seems so magical.
Heavenly send-off kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd go that way, but I almost thought they were going to go that way. Especially with all the weird imagery, like the monks on bikes and the club and all that kind of stuff that was so so sort of weird and strange. Not that New York can't be weird and strange like that. It seemed totally plausible.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the things, too, that I really liked. I think these days it's hard to pull off a really good montage.
Yeah.
Just because I won't speak for you guys because I am so cynical. And I think there are maybe other viewers like me.
I'm a cockeyed optimist with rose-tinted glasses.
You're hurting me. But yeah, so it's hard to pull off like a really good montage. And when a show does it,
yeah.
it's awesome.
Yeah.
And so that in that last episode, or either the last episode or the second to last episode, where I think you have Healy or Caputo kind of talking, just pans over everyone who's
yeah.
in a shit place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really well done.
So, who do you want to punch in the face more? Psycho Guard or those goddamn spin guys from MCC? Could they have picked more douchey bros in his like purple suit? I wanted to punch that guy every time he opened his mouth. That was such great casting.
I definitely want to punch the guard.
Yeah. Oh, sure. He's worse.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, those are some douchey bros.
Yeah.
When
yeah,
they
yeah.
fist bump because they figured out a way to smear the other guard. It's like, oh, I hate you guys so much. It's the very existence, this banality of evil.
But I wanted to punch Caputo for dragging his heels so much.
Man.
I mean, he was doing what the job said rather than what was right
yeah.
for so long. And he was a good guy that wasn't
yeah.
doing the good thing.
That's true.
That's more frustrating to me than
but,
villains that I just kind of expect to keep being villains.
But ultimately, Caputo does make a hard decision. Because the easy thing to do would have been to throw that guy to the wolves. throw the guard at the wolves because it would have made the convicts feel better.
True.
And it would have been what MCC wanted. The only guy who gets hurt is the guard who can't in any way affect him. And that guard's, you know, to him, that's nothing. But he stood up for the guard because he knew that it wasn't his fault, even though that's going to basically cause a riot in the prison. And so, it's going to fuck him at his job.
So looking at the next season, then.
Yeah.
I mean, things are kind of broken right now for them.
Yeah.
And I assume that they're still going to keep building and stuffing the prison with even more people. Like, they're not going to be deterred from that path. Is that kind of... Where do you guys see it going next season?
I thought season 5 was going to be the space prison season. That we would finally see the first... It's going to jump forward 30 years, and they're all going to be clones of themselves.
You do this with every show. It's always...
It's my thing, Grant. It's
always going to be in space or werewolves.
It's my thing. Well, one day I'll be right.
In your defense, I believe, did Leprechaun go to space in 4?
Leprechaun did go to space. Jason went to space.
Jason waited for like 9 or something like that, didn't he? But Leprechaun, I think it may have been 4.
I'm just saying, my thesis is everybody goes to space eventually.
Can I go to space?
Yes, eventually. We're all going to space.
Can I? It's season 4 or do I got to wait till season 10?
You know, I don't know the future, but I do know you're going to space eventually, Ashley.
Those two statements don't...
You're right. Aww. Oh, I was testing to see if you're a robot. If contradictory statements would make your head explode.
So
actual speculation?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to move on from there to our next show.
Actual speculation. I assume they'll pick up right where they left off, just like they did this season.
Yeah.
With a gun pointed at that guy.
Oh, yeah, Dayanara.
Dayanara does not have good... She never makes good choices.
Yeah.
No. So whatever she does will be the worst possible choice.
Last season, it was easy because it had this kind of lovely scene, and they could pick up storylines wherever they want. This is going to have to be a little bit more like... Game of Thrones has a similar rhythm where every now and then after certain seasons or after certain books, the first half of the season or the first half of the book is all cleanup.
Yeah.
And that's what's coming for Orange is the New Black. Because they have to...
You can't start this dark and keep going darker.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to have to end some of these arcs.
Yeah.
I was thinking if they like Judy King enough, they're going to have her be the one who pulls the trigger on that guard. So they can keep her in,
her in the prison. Yeah.
Except that'd be straight up murder. She'd go to Max.
No, because she's a white lady. She wouldn't go to Max. I'm just saying. We all know it's true.
I liked the Judy King arc, but I would like her to go.
I think no more Judy King. Although I would like her to still be like pressuring Lubchek from the outside, just because I love the idea of Lubchek being her lover man on the side, despite his non-willingness to do it.
I kind of love the idea.
Oh, me too. But I also love Lubchek when he's being forced to do shit.
Yeah.
Like, because otherwise he would just, you know, smoke weed all day and do whatever he wants.
He'll just not do anything.
Not do anything.
Yeah. See, well, that's why I'm not taking the quiz. Yeah. Because I worry, like, I'm not going to get one of the evil guards. Yeah. I don't make people swallow mice. No. But what if it turns out that Cosmo's like, sorry, girl, you're Lubchek. And I'm all, damn. Damn.
That's how they'd put it, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, girl, you're Lubchek.
I'll be like, well,
what if I take the quiz and I'm Healy? I have to go drown myself. Like,
don't forget
this is
the rocks. But of course, if you're Healy, you forget the rocks.
You forget the rocks.
You're not good at shit.
God damn it, Healy.
So we're going to go ahead and move over to talking about Silicon Valley. And we're going to do this one as well as Veep a little bit quicker than we might normally. But that's because this is a long episode.
Yeah, it's a long episode.
So we don't want to just kind of just keep things going.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley, Randy.
I thought the season was great. I thought the resolution with Gavin Belson and the elephant was hilarious. I love that Silicon Valley is like the anti-Entourage.
Yeah.
Like, instead of everything always turning out for them, everything turns out for them, but you never really think it's gonna. It always seems to be going badly.
They're a bunch of bumbling idiots that continue to screw themselves over.
But at the same time, like, Richard's whole thing about explaining his software, like, he was good at it. It's just that he needed 45 minutes per person, and that's not a viable business strategy.
No.
He's too wonky.
I love that it not only resolved itself, but it took and kept everyone back in the family. It folded everything back together. It's almost like a reset.
It is like a reboot.
But it eliminated a lot of the problems of them having to sell to other people, because by keeping Big Head and Ehrlich buying the company,
then it
all stays in the house. It all keeps familiar with us. And they're really smart about how they keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel like a cheat.
No.
It doesn't feel like we're just going in circles. It feels like this is probably what it's like. You're like, oh, you're right on the verge of breaking big. Something goes wrong, and you got to start from the beginning again.
They earned it. And they earned it in a very intelligent way. And, I mean, Mike Judge just continues to impress me with how he and, I guess, the rest of the writing staff continue to, like,
I mean, Nothing is ever going to beat their multiple hand job story.
No.
That is still the funniest segment the show has ever done.
Yeah.
But
although the SWAT board of death.
The SWAT board of death was close.
Yeah.
There was nothing in this finale that was like, oh, it's that moment. But, oh, or maybe Richard's bad-mouthing the company to the reporter. That was also a pretty great one. But despite there not being like one of those moments, this was a great finale.
Yeah.
And a great season.
Yes, absolutely.
But Veep was better.
Really? Okay. Yeah,
Veep
I mean,
was better.
I really enjoyed Veep as well, but I just didn't expect whatever it was.
You know what I love about Veep? I did not know where they were going. And apparently somebody mentioned the questions like, you called it, Randy, and I'm like, did I? Because I don't remember that.
I don't either.
I don't remember it. But I'll take the credit.
So she's out.
She's out. Out. 100% out.
And what do they do with the next season?
No, I can. The thing is, I can totally see it. Like, the post-presidential Salima Meyer, she has less to fear. Like, she's No Fucks Given Obama is nothing compared to No Fucks Given Salima Meyer. I can't wait to see what she's like in private life.
So you think it's just going to explore her private life?
I think it's going to explore everybody.
How do you keep the band back together?
I think they're going to explore what all of them do in the private sector. Like maybe she makes a foundation. Maybe she starts, you know, Jimmy Carter has this whole building houses thing. Maybe Salima Meyer will build adorable condos. I don't know.
You know what? There's a scene in the episode where the lady who ends up taking on taking the presidency.
Yeah.
That she keeps asking, Salina Myers keeps asking her, oh, wait, are you New Mexican or are you Mexican?
Yes, yeah.
I thought it was going to get revealed that, oh, wait, she's actually born in Mexico.
Oh, you thought they
No. I thought they were going to play off of the whole birth certificate thing.
I believe that Laura Montez will be president and that Salina Myers will be ex-president, and that's where the story's going.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to do... Because if they wanted to do a thing with her in the White House... They faked us really good that she was going to be Tom James's vice.
Yeah.
His Veep. That they were going to go back to that. And I'm glad they didn't because we've kind of, I think, maybe mined all the humor we could out of the maligned Vice President Salina Meyer. Seeing her post-presidential, we haven't seen that on TV really much.
I mean, we'll definitely get her and Catherine and Gary.
Yeah. Oh, I love Catherine.
I just kind of wonder, like, especially with how much she's burned all the rest of them.
Yes.
Like, how we'll see them in their roles, I guess, in the private life.
You know, Mike will work for it because Mike needs a job and he has three babies to support.
That's true.
And
he writes such great speeches.
And who's Kevin Dunn's character? He will work with her because he likes working with her.
Yeah.
So will Ken. Kent. Kent's got to work with her. What's he going to do? Ride around with a New Mexican gang all the time?
I'm not so sure he's married to the secretary.
You don't think so?
You were saying.
I think he might be.
Because he didn't know about her and some like details about her that I would think a spouse would.
Yeah, but doesn't it seem like theirs would be the kind of married relationship where he's like, how was your day, honey? She's like, you're not clear for that information. Doesn't that seem like Sue and Kent? Doesn't that seem like either one of them would do that to the other?
Yeah, that's fair, I suppose.
So I'm still going with my theory. The two of them got married and are married.
So you love this one much more.
Oh, I loved this finale. And then I watched them back to back. I watched the penultimate and the ultimate and the finale.
Okay.
So I saw the documentary episode right before.
Yeah.
And that may be the best episode they've done of the show so far.
It's
Catherine's documentary just killed me.
I love in the final, like, she keeps asking where her hard drive is.
Yeah. She's like, they're like, no, I don't know where that is.
It's gone.
It's gone. They've destroyed it. Because
that was
a bad idea. Yeah. Yeah.
That was so perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Game of Thrones.
Let's move to Game of Thrones. Because I'm sure we have maybe one or two things to say about this show.
Holy shit.
That's the one thing. And the other thing is everything else to follow.
I mean, holy shit, was this the best episode they've done?
It was real good.
They packed everything in there.
Yeah.
They resolved so many character story points, at least for this season, and now there's a lot less players in the game.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting to see where they're going to go.
I did not see that, because here's the thing. You'd been speculating about the whole she gonna blow it all up thing.
Yeah.
And
I was kind of wrong.
No, you were not entirely wrong, though.
Not entirely wrong.
You were right enough about what was going on. But the thing is, it was like that Hitchcock thing. I knew it was coming, and it was better,
because I knew where they were going with all that. Did you catch on early, Ashley, when you were watching it?
Yeah. And they were hinting pretty heavily toward it. The Queen of Thorns was sort of like, what are you going to do, kill everybody?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit.
But
she's got to kill everyone.
I didn't think... I was waiting for Marjorie to get out of there. I'm like, surely they didn't spend this whole season on her.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to kill Marjorie.
And surely they didn't spend this whole bit of story on Loras Tyrell and getting him out and scarring him just to blow him up 2 seconds later.
It's kind of perfect, though.
It was. It was amazing.
They were thinking they were big pawn or big manipulators, but they were also kind of pawns.
All they
in the
were
game.
Is casualties.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because they weren't willing to be as cutthroat as Cersei.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole thing is.
Yeah. Man, that was crazy. And then of course Tommen finally sees his mom for what she is and just gives up.
Yeah. Oh man. And that was just tragic.
Yeah, that was really sad.
Wasn't it a perfect parallel?
Yeah.
To like the very ending of the first episode, we have Bran being pushed out the window by the Lannisters.
Yep.
By the Lannister twins. And now their own son, their last kid, falls out. He commits suicide by falling out a window.
He's pushed out a window by her, really. She didn't physically push him, but she's the one who pushed him to do it. Metaphorically, she pushed him out that window.
Yeah.
Well, and I like the position that all of this leaves Jaime in, which is once again facing a crazy ruler with too much wildfire.
Yeah.
Wildfire. And it's like his exact same position where he got his nickname from. And he's just going,
a Queenslayer now, too?
Wait.
Do you think he was having sex with the Mad King?
All I'm saying is that you've seen his face.
I'm just saying.
How big of a crush do you have on Jaime Lannister? Don't lie to me.
It's pretty big.
Yeah, if you were king.
Oh, sure. He's your king's guard. You're like, I order you.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, that makes sense.
Prima nocta.
Yeah, and I am not judging. I would have made the same call. However, I mean, I think it's a silly question to ask.
That's a reasonable point. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, that whole thing of like, he loves his sister. But he also is not quite the monster that she is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually kind of pleased because there's only two. So I love Game of Thrones as an adaptation of a show of the books. Yeah. I think it's fabulous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I say that as somebody who also loves the books. I had like a couple like annoyances, and one of them was Jaime's story arc, because you start to love Jaime so much sooner in the books. He turns away from Cersei so much sooner in the books and doesn't go back.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal. And so the way that he handled River Run and a couple other things, I was just like, damn, like we were really going in the right way, Jaime.
Yeah.
And now the kind of just seeing her sit on the throne and realizing the situation that the world is in, I think that Jaime's going to come through.
So here's my question.
So you think he's going to kill her?
I think if it comes to that, but I think she lost his loyalty, I think, for good.
I mean, that was his one principled stance. Like, you know, as much as people want to call him out as being the Kingslayer, he did it because that guy was bonkers and was going to kill a bunch of innocent people.
Here's my question. Is Cersei essentially the big bad of the season, of the series now?
Well, she doesn't have anything good left, right?
The Night King is still
the Night King is the big bad.
I'm sorry. Like, when we talk about A Song of Fire and Ice, that's the war that's coming. And that's the great war that, like, the Red Queen, the Red Woman talks about and all of that. But as far as of the man-made world, I think so. I mean, she has nothing.
I mean, her children were the only thing keeping her human.
Yeah, exactly. Now that they're gone.
But my question is, if she is sort of the big threat right now, the Lannister has Lannisters have a powerful army, that's true. But the Freys just got taken out, and the Dornish have
now
made an alliance. She's underpowered.
Right. And so let me nuance my agreement with you.
Okay.
She is the big bad guy. She's not the big power.
Yeah.
So one of the things that varies, and I think this was played out in the show, but a lot more subtly, the reason that Varys sets Tyrion free.
Yeah.
The reason that he doesn't, even though he thinks Ned Stark was a good person and made the right choice, but he doesn't set him free.
Yeah.
In the novels, the reason he kills Kevin, there's like a lot of different things that happens, is because he wants anarchy in Westeros for Daenerys to come in.
Right.
And so I think that Cersei is the shittiest guy in town right now as far as a villain is concerned.
Yeah.
But power, no. Like, it's coming from the south, from the Queen of Thorns, Dorne, and Daenerys.
And we see, like, this episode was just full of parallels.
Yeah.
And you see her ascending the throne in the south.
Yeah.
And it's to a weak applause of an audience.
Yeah.
There's not much love in the room for her
no,
there.
No.
And then you get the complete opposite up in the north with Jon Snow when he takes over.
Yeah.
Because you know, MVP of the season, Leanna Mormont.
Yeah.
She proclaims him King of the North.
Yeah.
And everyone flips their shit for it.
Yeah.
Because, it was so awesome. That whole speech she gives.
Yeah, she's great.
And wasn't that such a, that harkened back to when Catelyn Stark.
Yeah.
When Catelyn Stark does the same thing about rallying all those guys in the room. You did this and you did this.
To arrest Tyrion.
Yeah.
It was like, it's another great scene there.
You know what? Despite the fact that Orange is the New Black was so emotional and everything, it never really got me to tear up. But I did tear up at Game of Thrones, and it was when Daenerys and Tyrion had their scene.
Aww.
And she gave him the hand pin.
You're weak.
Like, that was so amazing. That was so good.
It's so great because I love the idea that... So Tyrion was always given shit jobs on purpose.
Yeah,
and so there's this reference of at one point Tywin put him in charge of running the sewers or something like that.
Yeah.
But the little sideline is that from Tyrion is that, he did. But you know what? The sewers never ran better.
Yeah.
That whatever it is he does, he really excels at. And he sees a lot of, he finds joy in it in a weird kind of cynical way.
And this was like a legit validation.
This is like a legit validation. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm giving you this because you've given me your loyalty and I need your counsel. And I was just like, somebody loves him like I do.
Well, and the other thing I think was really good about that scene, Emilia Clarke and Peter Dinklage played the hell out of that scene.
Yeah.
Like, they both really... That sort of... Emilia Clarke tends to play a sort of very, very strong, powerful, imposing woman. And she sort of let her softness through.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyrion sort of played that vulnerability that you don't see very much off. You don't see that from Tyrion very often. And that was in that scene. Like, they were very genuine with one another. I think that's one of the things that made that scene work so well. I know we're supposed to feel a little bad that Arya's become a cold-blooded killer.
Only this bad. I'm making a
but
tiny
man,
inch sign.
Cheering so hard when she cut that dude's throat and watched him die.
Yep.
She fed him his sons.
How hardcore is that?
She must have found hot pie so he could cook her those little...
Oh, is that where he's been?
He's making human pot pie.
Arya's like, hot pie, have you ever cooked boys into a pie? And he's like, yeah.
That's some There Will Be Blood old boy shit.
Yeah, right?
Just like, okay, here's the plan, pie maker. You might not remember me, but I remember you, bitch. We're going to spend the next 3 weeks slow playing these guys so that he eats his son.
Yeah.
What is she, 9?
I mean, that thing, probably, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, he deserved the worst revenge she could come up with. He did a lot of bad shit. And he was so gleeful about it. So he deserved that revenge. So even though it makes her a total psychopath, I couldn't feel bad about it.
It was so sweet.
Yeah.
It was sweet. It seems small, but to me it means a lot because it's my favorite town.
Uh-huh.
I was so happy to see Dorne come back.
Yeah.
I didn't like the progression. That's the only other thing aside from Jaime I didn't like about the adaptation was it really, I felt like, so until the finale, took the legs out from under Dorne, which was such a beautiful city full of interesting characters.
Wait, did you like it in the books?
I loved it in the books.
Oh.
I didn't like it in the books. I didn't like it in the show.
I just kind of felt the same.
I loved Dorne in the books, and so I really felt like it took the wind out of its sails. And so then in the end, when it's like, okay, we're going to pick this back up where we left it, Varys is going to come in. The new, I guess that's, and I guess that's her, the prince's wife.
Yes,
are going to take over that role. I was like, awesome.
And is it Olenna Tyrell? I can never remember her name. Diana Riggs.
Olenna
Tyrell. She makes everything better.
Yeah, she does.
She made Dorne good because she told all those other little girls, the Sand Snakes,
like, shut up.
And she just insults everyone. Yeah. And it was like, this is the best Dorne scene I've ever seen.
I loved that scene. But I liked the Sand Snakes in the book because they were all different.
Yeah.
And those are the little touches that I felt like were missing. I didn't really care as much that they cut Pike, even though Asha next to Tyrion is my second favorite character. I love Asha. I still think the cuts in Pike were excellent. Yeah. Well done. Good ideas. But with Dorne, I liked the Sand Snakes, how there was one prissy girl who knew about poison and lies, and there was one thin lithe girl who was really good with a spear. Like, that was really cool.
What if they were all the same kind of somewhat sexy, showed their boobs to Bronn kind of characters?
How about if
we did that?
Yeah, I'm still going to watch that.
That's what you need. Really?
I'm just saying, that's kind of, I feel like that was the executive decision in the room. They're like, they're like, well, instead of that, how about if they're all the same and one of them shows her boobs to Bronn? And I'm like,
you're like a Showtime executive. Like, I see what you're saying about having a complex character, but how about
this?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Thanks, so, Showtime. Yeah,
see,
thanks.
The problem, yeah, the reason that like both men and feminists flip me off is because I agree this oversimplification sucks, but at the same time, I'm not going to look away. Her titties are out.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm torn.
Yeah, I mean,
don't put me in this position, Randy. I'm a guest.
Nobody puts Ashley in a corner.
I'm a guest.
No, I what else have we missed anything?
Well, we didn't talk about Sam and the library.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Have you guys ever seen the movie Clown with a K?
No.
It's
is that
it's
the one where they're from space?
Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
No.
Okay. But that's also with a K.
And you know what's interesting is the Killer Clowns from Outer Space are actually the guards at a space prison.
You were saying, sir.
It's a Danish comedy. It was really good. The Alamo Drafthouse actually picked it up and distributed it.
I remember the trailers Netflix. For it. Yeah.
But the main character from that is the guy sitting at the Citadel or whatever it's called in the library that Sam Cousin talks to. I just thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool.
It was the same actor there. And I was like, oh, I recognize that guy. But it just to see the joy on his face going to a magical library.
Right.
And that library was badass.
Yeah.
It was so huge.
Yeah, it was cool.
And I was like, whatever. The internet will change all that. You don't need books anymore. We did not talk about Bran and the Tower of Joy.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to go back to my theory. I know you don't want me talking about too many theories here.
It's fine.
But Bran got touched by the Night King.
Yeah.
He's branded in a way.
You still think he's going to break the...
He's got the curse. And, well,
and they made explicit the magical seal that you talked about on the wall.
They talk about a magical seal on the wall, and he already broke a magical seal on that tree. Yeah. He's going to pass the wall and open up the floodgate.
Oh, shit. You're totally right.
God damn it, Bran.
You are 100% fucking right.
And they're going to do one of those World War Z, like, zombies climbing on top of each other like ants to climb that wall thing. Yeah. And it's going to look fucking nuts.
So what you're saying is Bran is the worst.
Bran's the worst.
Yeah.
You just fucking everything up, Bran.
Damn it, Bran.
Never trust a dude with bangs.
No.
Never.
But we also got the gigantic reveal that everyone's been speculating on since early on.
Yeah.
But Jon Snow is actually Jon Targaryen.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Jon Targaryen Stark.
Jon Targaryen Stark.
He's got the Stark bloodline legit.
Yeah,
There's people that bumped up the audio and they say that the name that she actually tells him was Jaehaerys, which is would be the Mad King's father. So his grandfather.
Okay.
Great-grandfather.
Okay.
Because Jon Snow is now the nephew of Daenerys.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that would be that would be her oldest brother was Rhaegar.
I'm just wondering if when Daenerys shows up in Westeros, she's going to be like, well, I need someone to marry. Jon Snow clearly has the Starks. I'm going to marry him, and that's going to get icky.
Well, that's never been a problem for the Targaryens.
That's true.
They like it. Keep it in the family. Hey. So, a little bit more theory stuff.
Yeah.
So, there's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of interesting things with the prophecies going on here.
Yeah.
There's the Alor Ahai. I think I'm saying that terribly wrong, but the fire god that's supposed to come back again.
Yeah, Lord of Light. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Lord of Light thing that Melisandre's always going on about.
Yep.
Or also called the prince that was promised.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the prophecy is that the prince who was promised will be born under a red star.
Mm.
Now, we see that Daenerys, when she goes into the flame and births the dragons.
Yeah.
And she's reborn, essentially, in the first season.
Yeah.
That they're talking about the red star shooting across the sky.
Okay.
But in this scene, we see Ned Stark take that sword that he got from the other swordsman he killed down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And that sword is called Dawn. And it was supposed to be made from a meteor that fell from the sky, if you go and read the books.
Okay.
And he takes and places and leans that right against the bed, and there's a specific shot, and you see this little Dawn thing on the
sword. So you think Jon
is
the prince who was promised?
I'm saying they both could be.
Okay.
Mm. Like, because and it sets it right next to a bed, a bloody bed.
Yeah.
The blood red star or whatever.
Yeah.
And kind of interesting. They keep, like, kind of toggling between the two, because it's supposed to also be a Targaryen that was born, and now we got two of them.
Yeah.
And
we got three. You know Tyrion's one of them,
and Tyrion.
Right? He's got to be. He can handle the dragons.
Now, the theories about Tyrion are a deeper dive. Like, how are we even going to get that with, like, the dad being dead?
Yeah.
So that's just theory, I think.
Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys feel about this whole 13 more episodes and that's it?
15, I think, right?
I thought it was 13. I thought it was a 7 episode and a 6 episode.
I think it was seven and eight.
At any rate, yeah, 15, you're right. At any rate, what do you think about shortened seasons? I'm good with it.
Yeah, me too. This goes back to what you were saying before. I mean, they haven't really steered me wrong yet.
Yeah.
So if they say that's what it takes and it's going to be a good story, I believe them.
Yeah, I'm for endings. I'm for a good ending. I would rather, I mean, yeah, it's going to suck to be done with Game of Thrones, but hopefully they'll figure some other, we can start the Lyanna Mormont's spinoff.
Yeah, or pick up the Hedge Knight.
Or pick up Hedge Knight. They should totally do Hedge
they
Knight,
should
by the way.
They should do the Hedge Knight. It's a good story.
You know, I've been agitating for, and I heard that this was in development at Sci-Fi at one point, the Wild Card series. Do you know this?
No, I was worried you were going to say another Sharknado.
No.
Because I know what a super fan of that franchise you are.
I do love Sharknados, but I feel like it sort of downplays the real life danger of a Sharknado actually hitting America, and I feel like we shouldn't tempt fate in that way.
Mm.
But Wild Cards was a series, it was an anthology series of superheroes that George R. R. Martin was one of the creators of.
Huh.
And it sort of took them through, like, it happened in like the 30s, something happened. There were superheroes throughout like the 70s and 60s. It very much was like sex and violence and politics and what would the world look like in an alternate history where superheroes were a thing. And it would very much fit in the people who like Game of Thrones would go nuts for Wild Cards.
Man, have you read Fever Dream?
No, I've not read Fever Dream.
So I think that it would make a wonderful miniseries.
Okay.
It's one of his, I guess for him, it would be a novella or a short story. It's
sure.
only about 300 pages
sure.
or something like mm-hmm. that.
Yep.
But it takes place on, I think you could probably call it like a horror historical fiction.
Okay.
Because it takes place on the Mississippi. During like the height of like steamboats, and mm-hmm. he is meticulous with like
okay.
the timing and the knowledge of steamboat captains and everything. But it's a world full of vampires, not sparkly, scary.
Okay.
And it's fucking awesome.
Oh.
I feel like sparkly is the scariest of all vampires.
So whatever happens, we're saying HBO should stay in the George R. R. Martin business.
Yeah, preferably.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. So I guess we can wrap it up there.
Yeah, that's a good wrap.
It's going to be sad that we don't have any more Game of Thrones to discuss for a while. But we have plenty of other TV, as evidenced by what we're even discussing we're going to have on next week. And I want to say, Ashley, thank you so much for joining us this
week. Yeah, thanks for having me. This was so fun.
Where can people find you?
Well, I do some writing for The Chronicle. I do some reviews and random podcasts on One of Us, sometimes with Randy. We play games together.
We do.
And other than that, probably at home.
Also, she's outside your window right now. Look.
Oh, my God. What, do I end it there? Is that what I'm supposed to do? I don't think I'm going to end it there.
No, I wouldn't end it there.
I'm going to say thank you, listeners, for all the support you guys are giving us over on iTunes, on Patreon, for checking out that episode, recommending it to your friends, asking us all the questions. Always, we appreciate it. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.
I hear Oreos I would eat. Blueberry, strawberry, chocolate strawberry, blueberry strawberry, chocolate blueberry strawberry, apricot, vanilla, double vanilla, double stuffed vanilla, vanilla strawberry blueberry, vanilla strawberry blueberry, but one of the cookies is chocolate.